In traditional Christian teaching, envy is one of the seven deadly sins. And as with all the other six, calling it a deadly sin doesn't seem to help much in preventing it from happening. In that Old Testament way of thinking, if you find yourself feeling envious, you can look forward to a good old smiting from God for good measure. You can try not to have a feeling. Good luck with that. What you'll be doing is denying it or suppressing it and making it a bigger problem as a result. So, envy is a thing. How does it specifically get in the way of creative success, you may ask? Well, ask anyone who's feeling miserable that they're not as good as someone else at a thing and see what they say about it. Envy can be mild and manageable, but it can also be really demotivating and dispiriting. I wanted to talk to my friends about what they think envy is, what it's for, whether it can be useful in any way, and whether there are some ways of thinking about it that are better than others. I'm Frances Butt, and this is Emotipod 2, Creative Blocks. Since the science of psychology got going, we've gained more understanding about envy, but there's still a lot of disparity out there. Searching online, you can see a variety of explanations for what envy is, like it's the flip side of pride, or that it's a symptom of low self-esteem, or even that it means wanting to destroy what someone else has. Crikey. So depending on who you listen to, envy can mean slightly different things. I've chosen to set out on this episode with the start point of envy being a form of anxiety, an emotion that's actually designed to help you survive, because envy can, at best, be a motivator and help you try and get for yourself what you need. But at worst, it might drive you to steal or copy what someone else has, or even to give up or become depressed. How can we harness the usefulness of envy without succumbing to its downsides? It's time to hear from my clever friends and see if they can bring some clarity to envy. First, copywriter Oliver Lee.
It's an emotional function. It's like, they've got something I would like, I don't have it. Why don't I have it? You know, there's something about envy.
No, you're making me laugh. I don't think you can use this. I'll tell you the story. Don't use
please
the story.
Do. But it'll make me laugh. Come on, maybe. You can't do that.
Maybe. When I was much younger than I am now, and when I was in plays at school,
yeah,
I always wanted to have the parts. I dreamed of having the parts. Do you remember sort of Errol Flynn movies?
Oh, yes.
And you remember Errol Flynn in his prime with those long roll-top leather boots,
yes,
which sort of come all the way up the leg and sort, yeah, of turn over sort of mid-thigh.
Fantastic.
I always wanted to have the parts, which would involve me wearing boots like that.
Yes.
I never got those parts.
Oh, yes.
No, my casting was old men or peasants.
Oh.
So I was rarely out of little round glasses and smocks.
Yep.
Now I look at it and think, well, of course I didn't get those parts. I didn't have heroic enough thighs.
Yes.
What I realise now is I liked the boys who had the heroic thighs, so that's why I wanted those parts.
Right, but you were because saved I wanted, from yourself.
I wanted to be that sort of boy. I wasn't,
yeah,
but I liked something about the boys who were like that.
Very good point, because there's the desire for something you could have, possibly, and there's the desire for something you will never have or never be, and that is going to be just pointless torture. Unless you can let it go.
As the song from Frozen says.
We cannot be what we are not.
Yeah, we cannot be. I was never going to be a rugby boy.
Yes, right. Right. So there's envy. Are my needs being met? Do you need the thigh-length boots, for example? Great example. Would you survive without them? Or
yeah, no, I mean,
is it something you could move on from and maybe go for something that you could have?
Yes, I mean, I look back on that and think, oh, that's so revealing. Look at all the internalised shame I had. Oh. Look at all the gender stereotypes,
right,
that I was not really dealing with or was being confronted with.
Yes, yeah.
This is what it is to be male.
Yeah.
I wasn't that sort of male.
Yes, yes, yeah.
So I was desiring to be
this
other thing.
Yeah.
Those guys are ticking the boxes of what is being expected.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, actors... Well, as you know, Frances, I work with actors in training a lot, and they will seek to be other than they are themselves.
Yes.
And actually what you have to understand is that out there in the profession, who you are is what the profession may or may not buy.
Yes.
And you can't change that. Ooh, at a certain level.
You've got to accept that.
You just have to accept that.
Yeah, big one.
Which sometimes may be the curse of being the beautiful one, because beauty is probably not going to be around forever.
Absolutely.
Or there will always be somebody who is more beautiful. Mm-hmm. Look at the people who are not like you. Well, that's the point. They're not like you.
Yes. And you imagine they have success and a satisfaction and joy and contentment that you long for. And I think that you're projecting all that about yourself onto them. It doesn't mean that they have it by any means. No. In fact, they could be the absolute opposite
not.
Of that.
Yes. Could absolutely not mean that at all. And joy and success and all of the... None of this stuff is guaranteed.
No.
And even if you have it for a while, there's no guarantee it's going to continue.
Exactly. But again, this projection thing, that was a... It's a self-acceptance on me.
Self-acceptance? Oh, lordy. Well, that's a lifetime's work, isn't it?
Yeah.
It certainly is. Self-acceptance is one of our favourite themes of this series, and it's pretty fundamental, isn't it? For example, whatever height, basic body shape or hair type you are, you're going to be a whole heap happier if you don't waste energy wishing you were another height, basic body shape or hair type. Easy to say, not always easy to do. But Ollie's so right. You might imagine that handsome fellow has it all, or is living the dream. But even the most gorgeous specimens imaginable can't possibly fit every mould, every job, every role, every dream. So that was a great start. But I forgot to mention in the intro the word that people often use instead of, and more often in fact than envy, when they mean envy, and that's the word jealousy. It's funny, isn't it? But they do. When I was growing up in Wolverhampton, I never heard anyone say, "I'm really envious of her going to Spain for her holidays." It was always, "I'm really jealous of her going to Spain for her holidays." So let's check in with our resident psychotherapist, Lisa Jones, to help us with the distinction.
First of all, the definition of envy, because people use the word jealous a lot, don't they? When they mean envy, envious. Mm-hmm. So we get a bit of clarity on that would be great, first of all.
Yes. So envy, lovely definition.
It's all written down and everything.
So it's to wish you had something that somebody else has. Yeah. So whether it's their looks, their money, their career, etc. So it's more of a longing, whereas jealousy has more hostility to it. So if somebody is jealous of something, there's normally a resentful feeling that goes with that.
Ooh,
whereas envy is more of a, I really want that.
Yeah. So jealousy is more connected to possessiveness and things, isn't it? So yeah. So envy is, I want what they've got, basically, isn't it? And in terms of creative lives, we're all susceptible to envy. We'd all love a bit of success, and we all admire people whose work we admire, and we'd like a bit of what they've got. That's envy right there. We have idols. We have people who never meet them, because when you meet them and they're ordinary people like anyone, but we get all tongue-tied and flustered because we think they're super special.
Yeah.
This is putting people on pedestals, isn't it? And projecting onto them our own dreams of glory and of escaping from our struggles. And it's so easy to slip into a pattern of thinking that someone else has it better than we do, even when they clearly don't. And that's a weird sort of self-torture.
But the reason I wanted to ask you about envy in particular was a particular phenomenon when not only are you envious of what someone has, their brilliance makes you feel miserable. I have actually experienced that feeling and been very distressed by it. I mean, it's like, why can't I just be happy for them?
Mm.
Something's upsetting me about myself that I don't have what they've got. So I wonder if you could talk a bit about that.
Yes, absolutely. So the word that came to mind, and I know it's slightly different, and we've talked about this before, is comparisonitis.
Oh, yeah.
Excuse me, that lovely feeling when we're wanting what other people have, so kind of that very envious feeling. And I think a lot of it, as you've described, when we have that kind of real difficulty with trying to be happy for somebody or celebrating their success and all of those things, is it almost feels like if we're feeling that way about somebody else, somewhere deep down in us, there's a belief that we either can't have it, that we can't achieve it, we don't have the capabilities, the skills, etc., or that we're not good enough to get it,
right,
or that we're not deserving of it.
Right.
And yeah, that tends to be where those kind of feelings,
yeah,
come from.
Yeah, there's some shame bubbles up there that we don't deserve to have this wonderful thing that we really would love to have. Mm-hmm, there's something about shame. Oh, it always comes back to shame, mm-hmm, doesn't it, it seems.
Comparisonitis. That inflammation of the ego familiar to so many of us. Here's writer, director and performer Victoria Firth.
When you said envy, it didn't really resonate with me until you talked about, I guess, how people potentially measure their art or the potential of the art that they might make up to other people's and compare it unfairly. Mm. And I think that some of the things that artists suffer with, like overdeveloped self-judgment or inner critic or doubt or what have you, art is infectious.
Mm.
And I really experienced that myself when I went to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival with my own show, because right, you were just in such a unique and extreme situation of there's just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of artists and they're all, you know, taking a massive risk and they all want their show to be really well received and everybody's going, how many tickets have you sold? And oh, I've not sold enough and I've got this review and I didn't get a review and I, you know what I mean? And there's all these kind of things that we compare ourselves to and it's sort of not helpful, basically. I'm trying to find a more eloquent way of saying it, but it's not helpful.
It certainly isn't. But knowing it doesn't stop it happening. I took my envy misery story to music producer Amos Childs. Ignore the train whooshing by.
I've experienced that myself.
Yeah, I have too.
Yeah.
And I still do all the time. Yeah. I guess you're kind of working in an environment where, even with really close friends, sometimes I'll hear something amazing that they've done and I will have this weird like push-pull thing of being like incredibly happy for them,
yeah,
and incredibly proud of them, but at the same time feeling like, oh, fuck, like that's really, really good. Yeah, feeling jealous. And I think I have it more listening to people I don't know or people that I sort of vaguely know.
That's funny. It's the other way around for me. I feel worse when it's people I know, because it seems like it should be more attainable. Whereas people I don't know are up there or out there, so to speak. We're all different, aren't we? But I like what Amos said about the push-pull thing. We are so capable of having contradictory emotions at the same time.
But yeah, definitely still have that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, how do you help yourself with that when it's a distressing thing, you know? And then I get distressed about being distressed about it, you know, because it doesn't seem like I'm being fair on these people for doing their wonderful work. I could just be celebrating it and enjoying it for them, but I'm so sad inside. It's a weird mixture, isn't it? It's a really weird mixture, sort of to not be happy for other people.
It's to do with...
just relax a bit.
Yeah, I think it's to do with... It might seem like an outward thing, but I think it's probably an inward thing most of the time. Like you're putting pressure on yourself and you're angry at yourself that you can't, or you don't think you've been able to make something as good as, you know, X, Y, or Z. So I don't think it's really about, I mean, obviously it is, obviously it's not a good thing, but I think it's more inward than outward, really, isn't it?
It is. It so is. And because of that, it doesn't necessarily matter how much success you may have had either. I think I've told this story before in a previous episode, but it's worth repeating in this version I told Lisa. It was something I overheard during a tea break on a film set long ago.
Bill and I were first doing promos for, he was doing promos for the KLF, a big successful band. They were having massive hits and they were doing films, and D-Light, Groove is in the Heart, was out, and they were doing their filming. And I remember Jimmy Courtney from the KLF listening to that. Yeah, it happened to be on the radio or something, building a set or something. And he went, oh, listen to that. He said, what's the point? They're so good. Mm-hmm. And that was like a really successful band listening to another successful band. So there you go. Yeah. Envy isn't just for the beginners.
No, absolutely.
You can have envy no matter how successful you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. No matter how good we think we are or other people think that we are.
It's kind of good in a way to know that anyone can succumb to envy, including super successful people. It normalizes it, which maybe helps quell the need to hold it as a kind of secret shame. But What can we do about our envy? Here's what Amos does.
I find it easier to just listen to stuff that's really, really different to what I would do a lot of the time.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Because then you can't really compare it to your own work. But I also think maybe there's something you can take from, you know, like what we were saying earlier about, like, what's the point in trying to make something when all of these great works of art exist already? It's like, well, it's a good way to get better quickly, I guess, because you're comparing yourself to these amazing things. And so it's like chucking yourself in at the deep end, I guess, isn't it? You're being harsh on yourself and probably being unhealthy and, you know, whatever. But you're putting yourself in the same sort of space as
them. There could be a degree of processing in that is, what is it that is so great that I could create or do something on that level? So there's something about some processing going on there about. So there's the processing and then there's the emotion associated with
it. Yeah, there's the emotion. The first thing for me that hits me is the emotion of like, fuck, like it's so good. And then then I'm thinking like, well, yeah, why is it so good? It's like, okay, because it's really loose, or because it sounds like they're having fun, or, you know, whatever. Like, it's rarely about like the musicality of stuff for me, because I know that's just like off the table. I'm never going to be technically, musically minded, I don't think. I'm not particularly interested in that. But yeah, I think you can learn stuff from it as well. You can learn from those emotions you have. And
well, it's interesting the way you described what you were listening to as not about the technicals so much as they sound like they're having fun. Mm. Or what is it? It's making it feels fantastic. There's something about the emotional effect of that music is so stonking.
Mm.
Great that Amos talked about processing both the emotional response and the reasoning response. The what makes that so good, the questions that those feelings will raise. Here's Victoria again, accompanied by her dog Blythe, who's busy seeing off passers-by.
One of the things that I've talked to people about when I've been doing self-care work is to try and, at the start of a project or before you undertake something, think about what your own measures of success are. When I took a show to the Edinburgh Fringe, what I set out to do was, after a big break, was to see how I felt about performing again. That was my goal. And because I was thinking of making performing more central in terms of how I spend my time, I also want to see, can I do it? Can I sustain it every day for a number of days, you know, for a month? And will I enjoy it? And have I got the personal resilience? And I made an autobiographical show. I made it really quickly. It wasn't polished. But I wanted to see whether I could make something that would resonate with other people, that other people would, you know, get something out of. So that was actually my measures of success. But then when I got there in this infectious company of other artists in this high-pressure environment, it switched, and I started thinking about, have I sold enough tickets? Did I get a good enough review? You know, theirs was better than mine. And then it's very easy to go away feeling like you haven't succeeded, or, you know, you're not doing good enough. But actually, if I compared it to my measures of success, I did great. I enjoyed it. I had an amazing time. I decided that I did really love performing, so I was going to make a commitment to it. I didn't professionally embarrass myself. You know, it was good enough. And I had some really nice emails from people who said it really spoke to them because of the personal narrative.
So
on that level, it was a total win. If I look at it through the more global lens, then, you know, not so much. So I think it's really important for people who want to be creative to think about, in each case, because it's different, you know, what are their goals for it? Is it about they're trying out a new collaboration? You know, they're learning a new way of working. There's a message they particularly want to get across. Like, maybe it is they want to make loads of money, they want to get famous, and they want everybody to review it and give them 5 stars. I mean, those things are really nice, but they're not the only drivers that we have when we make art.
By no means.
And so I think to have your own little manifesto of, this is why I'm doing it, is quite a good touchstone then to offset that potential negative comparison or envy, if that's what it is, or what have you, and to just have something to come home to.
That's such a lovely, useful thing to do, to create a manifesto that reflects your values and your goals and no one else's. Back to Lisa.
There's envy that doesn't bother you, and then there's this stuff that really eats away at you, and there's a big distinction. So it's the stuff that bothers you that I was wanting to talk about, really, in terms of this series. Yeah, what do we do about that? How do we make ourselves feel better about our sense of worth? Or, you know, I mean, that's a big one, isn't it? Like, you're like, oh, just fix that in one, please. Could you, Lisa?
Yes.
It's looking inside, isn't it? And seeing what's under the bonnet there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because personally, I think every single human, every single one of us in some form or fashion to varying degrees struggles with the not good enough feeling, the not deserving, that kind of lack of self-worth. And it's a really difficult one because, and I know your favourite, it's all very well people say, oh, we'll just think positive or just tell yourself that you're worthy and all of those things. But actually it can be so much more detrimental. So really the way to do it, and as I talk about all the time, all of these things take consistency, they take effort, it takes practice. But starting small, you know, kind of starting small. Often people kind of try and aim for the big thing, or they'll try and change lots and lots and lots of things all at the same time. And then everything will fall apart because our brains just cannot do that. We have to take it in really small steps. So when it comes to things like self-worth, it's finding the evidence, almost reminding us ourselves, okay, well, what have I achieved?
Once envy, or for that matter, any emotion, has escalated to the extent that it's running rampant inside you, it's much harder to get out of. But it's so important to know that it's not impossible. Like Lisa says, you have to start small and go slowly.
What have I done? And it doesn't have to be the same thing. It could be something similar, but it's just reminding ourselves, well, actually, I have done X. I can do this. Yeah. I have validation from these sources. I mean, ideally, we want the internal validation as well as the external. And just kind of recognizing those small things. And that can feel really difficult, especially if someone's in a very difficult place and it feels all consuming, that there isn't any hope or any light at the end of the tunnel. That can be very challenging. And in those circumstances, working with someone can be really beneficial. Because, of course, you know, whether it's a therapist, a coach, whoever it is, but having that external objective viewpoint is really, really important. Because, you know, as you know, I know when we're in it, it's kind of impossible to see
exactly.
And if you've never heard the wonderful 1947 children's story, Sparky's Magic Piano, go to the link in the text for this episode. It's fantastically schmaltzy stuff, and it really drives home the message about patience and commitment.
Again, another theme in this series seems to be incremental progress. Mm-hmm. And seeing something so polished and so accomplished and feeling the longing for that degree of brilliance and magnitude of success as well, when you haven't even started yet. And it's getting yourself real about just getting down to incremental steps and getting down to work, really, I guess, isn't it?
But practice makes progress.
Yes.
Is what I say. And progress makes not perfection. We've done perfection. You know, it is about taking those steps. It's, you know, it's like I often get this when clients come to me and kind of effectively say, right, so in one session, can you deal with all of this? It's like, no, I can't. But, you know, it's when people kind of say, I don't know, let's say, right, I'm going to learn the piano. I want to be a concert pianist.
Yes.
Brilliant. Okay, fantastic. And then they go to the lesson and after the first lesson, they can't read the full piece of music and play it perfectly. It's like, oh, well, I can't do it. I'm rubbish. And it's like, okay, you know, and I think people often don't quite realise. And I hate to say it because nobody wants to have to put in the graft and all the rest of it. But in anything that we're learning, it takes the time, you know, and in terms of our brains and that neuroplasticity and learning all of those things, whether it's a new thought process, a new skill, it's the doing that we have to keep repeating to kind of create those neural pathways. And learning's difficult. And often when people kind of stop, they feel, you know, when we get to that place where we feel agitated and confused and it's like, oh, I don't get it. That's actually a really good sign. That's our brain going, oh, okay, I'm processing this. And then in order for it to stick, that's where sleep and things become really important. So that's actually where it all kind of stores. But it's the doing, and it's the doing the things every day, the practice, the consistency that helps us get good.
Yeah, so the brain training part of practicing, having your attention on the task at hand is really fundamental, isn't it? Training yourself to just focus on what you're doing. Women in particular who multitask and tend to be the social knitting people are always thinking about the thing they're not doing. And it's, again, so giving yourself permission to do what you're doing and not think about anything else, yeah, that's a huge one, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where you put your attention. Yeah.
Yeah. And on that, you know, it's not possible to focus on more than one thing at one time. You know, we like to think that we can, but we're not really. We're just flitting our attention between lots of things.
Okay.
And it takes, again, the common theme, practice. And especially in today's world, post-pandemic and technology and what have you, all of our attention spans are much, much shorter. So it really does take a conscious effort to really focus on something.
Ooh, that's another episode, isn't it? Attention span. Yeah. Holy moly. Yeah, yeah, we'll do that one.
And I look forward to that episode. But I wanted to ask Lisa how we can worry less about feeling envious.
And can you think of it as a good thing, a useful thing? Because it exists for a reason, envy, doesn't it? It's kind of, why I need this thing, or do I need this thing? Mm-hmm. Why haven't I got this thing? Mm-hmm. So it has a function.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if we're able to have the mind set around it that, okay, this is something that I would like to achieve or something I'd like to aspire to, how can I do that? Mm. Then that can be a positive thing.
So it's a driver.
Yeah, providing it doesn't become all-consuming and all, you know, because of course that is...
all misery-making.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's that balance. Again, I talk about balance all the time with everything. Mm. And that's not always easy, but, you know, it's finding that balance and being able to recognise when that's tipping from healthy to unhealthy, you know, when it's kind of like, oh, actually, I might be being really obsessive about this and this might actually now be detrimental to my health and well-being and I need to step back.
Yeah.
As with all things, it's a question of degree.
Basically, what we focus on expands. Energy goes where focus flows, so to speak. So, if, you know, it's like if somebody focuses...
again, slowly.
Energy goes where focus flows.
Oh, very nice.
So if we're focusing all of our attention on a problem, for example... it becomes all consuming. It's all we can think about. It's, you know, it takes over. But if we're focusing on a solution, you know, that's a helpful thing. So again, it's recognizing where the focus is actually going. It's like if we're focusing.
What are you following? Yeah.
Yeah. If we're focusing on, oh, that person's got this and, you know, and I really want that. And why can't I have that? And, you know, if we focus on that.
The obstacle.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's not going to help. Whereas if we're focusing on, like we were just saying, going, that person's achieved that. I would love to have that. How did they do it? I wonder if I could do that. What steps do I need to put in place to help me achieve that? Of course, being realistic in that process. Because there will be some things that for some people we can't achieve.
Right. Well, and yeah, if you've gone through that process, presumably, and you've reasoned your way through to discovering that you're not going to be able to achieve that, then maybe you get a bit of peace of mind with that. You can actually let it go and go and do something else.
Yeah, yeah.
But until you've investigated for yourself, that envy isn't going to leave you alone, maybe, until you've really figured it out one way or the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And being comfortable with it. I mean, I'm just thinking of an example. When I was younger, I remember being at school, so I won't mention names, but there was a girl in my year and we did the same subjects. We competed in the same sports. We were both, you know, the drama. I mean, like everything, we fancied the same boys. I mean, you name it. Everything was the same. And truthfully, as much as it pains me to admit it, she outdid me on every single thing.
Ooh.
And that was quite challenging. And she was always, when it came to drama, for example, in the school plays and everything, she was always a lead. She was always, always a lead. Mm. I've never been the lead.
Right.
Which is something that I had to accept. Like she's a far stronger, well, I'm a stronger dancer. She's a stronger singer. So she was always, you know, obviously musical theatre, you know, the lead, which was fine. And I kind of had to accept, it's like, okay, so I'm not vocally, I'm not the lead. I'm not, but what I have accepted and I'm very comfortable with, I'm the really good supporting role.
Okay.
You know,
so
that, and I love that.
You've discovered about yourself through...
Basically being envious of her and wanting to get that and kind of then having to accept and go, oh, actually... that's not my role.
Your strength.
That's not my strength. My strength's over here. So let me take all of that and focus it over here. And then
So it's had a role in helping you to discover something about yourself you might not have really figured out without it. That's a nice way of thinking of envy, that it can be a useful tool in that way to help you figure out stuff.
That's kind of where I wanted to end up with these conversations. Thank you, Lisa. If you're able to work with it and spend some time investigating what's behind the feelings, envy can play a useful role in figuring out whether or not you can achieve something or have something. If you can't, it's good to know, because you can move on to discover what you can do and get busy enjoying that. Let's round things off now with a couple of quotes, as I like to do. The novelist Lionel Shriver said, A lot of people get so hung up on what they can't have that they don't think for a second about whether they really want it. And never forget, as romance author Debbie Maycumber puts it so well, if the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, you can bet the water bill is higher. In the next episode, we'll be looking at something on the opposite side of envy, and it's something that can be hard to deal with, snobbery. But until then, keep creating what you love creating because you love it. You need no other reason.